In our journey through the Hebrew Scriptures this fall, we are following the narrative lectionary, which is taking an approach that is a little disconcerting, for me anyway. Instead of choosing a traditional sort of story, a more linear narrative, and working our way through the Scriptures focused on that story, we are instead following a theme, the theme of promises. And I'll admit that I've often felt that I've taken on more than I was prepared for this fall. I've found myself on more than one occasion not only wondering about the passages of this series, but also their context and intent. And then perhaps most troubling of all is that the supporting materials haven't been much help. So I've definitely been a little bit more on my own listening. There's a podcast that goes along with this, and there's been many a week where I've sort of listened to that. Usually it was on Tuesday, and thought, what are they talking about? I don't know, that doesn't sit well, I guess. So anyway, here we are. And so instead, did think about, like, just let's just not do it anymore. But still, I've continued, and especially since Hannah presents certainly something that we should have for some focus. So Hannah is someone that, anyone come today with a good, solid knowledge of Hannah? See, this is why we're going to talk about Hannah today. All right, and so for today, we are talking about Hannah, her song, and the birth of Samuel. You all know Samuel pretty well, maybe, too? Yeah, well, you guys in the front should. All right, so we've made a big leap from last week, where we were considering the golden calf, and perhaps more shocking in the story, Moses' ability to change God's mind. And we're taking this big leap forward, so let's try to get a little handle on some context for today. I know not hugely interesting for everyone, but just so you know a little bit, and just a little bit of context, and try to absorb this information that ought to help us in appreciating, at least to some extent, the focus passage for today. The story contained in the books of Samuel, there are two books, 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, tells us of the extraordinary change in the way Israel governed itself. Up to this time, the passage that we're doing today, up until that time, there had been various tribes who on occasion had come together to combat a threat from other nations. In each instance, in the book of Judges, we are told how a person was raised by God to lead the tribes on that particular occasion. The Spirit of God settled on the person, and even when it is not overtly mentioned in the story, it is clear that the way the story progresses, that we know God's hand is directly involved in the successful consequences. 1 Samuel and 2 Samuel tell us about the immense political and new government structures which take place around the end of the 10th century BCE, a long time ago. The center of government during the time of the judges was at Shiloh, and by the time we get to the end of 2 Samuel, the center of what is now an empire has moved to, anyone want to guess? Jerusalem. Gold star. The voices for setting up a monarchy became stronger, and it fell to Samuel, the last of the judges, to be instrumental in the forthcoming tussle between those who wanted a monarch and those who believed that God would continue to raise up leaders when required. Now, the amount of material which focuses on Samuel, Saul, and David compared with the space given to the remainder of the kings of Israel is quite disproportionate. A total of 55 chapters is given to these three people, and 47 chapters to all the remaining kings of both the northern and southern kingdoms. So here we are, paying attention to a part of the Bible we don't pay a lot of attention to, but there's a lot going on here. We are in an important section then, and today we are concerned with the birth of Samuel and the circumstances of that birth. Now, it's a complicated piece of story that we have this morning. Hannah is yet another woman, a wife, like we've seen before, who is having trouble conceiving. As probably any woman in her place would have been, she is worried and getting desperate. In her time, Her value and worth is very much centered around her ability to produce children, and it's not happening. So she prays and she prays, even to the extent that she is willing to make a sort of bargain with God. Give me a son, and I'll give him to your service. Who cannot feel for Hannah or know of what she speaks? Whether or not our prayers have been about the desire for a child or some other desperate longing or yearning, I suspect all of us know very well how Hannah is feeling, even though she lived many thousands of years ago. And then what we find in the story is that Hannah's prayer seems to be answered in just the way she wanted. She conceives and bears a son. Now, here's where we find ourselves, or certainly I find myself, in a bit of a tricky place. I've had many a conversation over the years about prayers and longing and how this works. Does God answer some prayers, but not others? Does God like certain people more than other people? Does God pay attention to particular people, but not to others? Is God a sort of a fickle God, allowing some to feel the fulfillment of their deepest yearning and others just left in the cold with a clear, no, you can't have that? Does God truly allow for a particular person to win the lottery or one's favorite sports team to win while turning a blind eye on those who live in places torn apart by war, disaster, or famine? Is God interested in whether or not the Patriots win this afternoon, but seems to care not at all about the children who will die today trying to escape Syria? Hannah seems clear in her awareness that her prayers were answered by God. It is certainly understandable why she would feel that way, but that's different than God actually working that way. The difference between feeling and actually experiencing a real thing. But that's not really where I'd like to go today. Let's just say that I've got a little bit of an issue with how Hannah views prayer and how it works. But it is important, and something we might miss if we get too involved in whether or not God answers prayer so directly. And what we might miss is that we have a fascinating portrait in our little passage today of an ancient woman engaging in theology. Hannah's song, after all, is not really to God. It is about God. Women are not just good for the production of offspring and the continuance of family, for putting food on the table and doing the laundry. Women, plural, because Hannah is not alone, are also capable of theology. And this is an aspect of what's going on in today's passage that we shouldn't lose sight of. We should take a moment to ponder and celebrate. Hannah's song, for many of us, may feel a little familiar. Anyone recognize Hannah's assessment and understanding of who and what God is? Anyone recognize some of the stuff that was in there? Anyone? Her name begins with M. Mary. There's a little section in Luke where Mary says some words that we, most of us, know very well. My soul magnifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior, for he has looked with favor on the lowliness of his servant. Surely from now on generations will call me blessed, for the Mighty One has done great things for me, and holy is his name. He has brought down the powerful from their thrones and lifted up the lowly. He has filled the hungry with good things and sent the rich away empty. Sounds perhaps a little familiar to what the words are from Hannah. My heart exalts in the Lord. My strength is exalted in my God. The bows of the mighty are broken, but the feeble gird on strength. Those who were full have hired themselves out for bread, but those who were hungry are fat with spoil. The barren has borne seven, but she who has many children is forlorn. The Lord makes poor and makes rich. He brings low. He also exalts. He raises up the poor from the dust. He lifts the needy from the ash heap, to make them sit with princes and inherit a seat of honor. For the pillars of the earth of the Lord's, and on them he has set the world. Two women, two, and not the only ones, but two that we look at today, lifting up recognition, understanding, awareness, appreciation for the God they know and know well, just like other women in the Bible. Theology on the lips of a couple of women who lived a long, long time ago. And yet we still wrestle with the place, the status, the station, the role of women. Are women to be judged only by how they look, their ability to produce children, their acknowledgement of where they belong? How can it be that we are still having this conversation? There have been countless people over the span of history who have pointed to the Bible as an excuse for keeping women in, at best, a second-class status. And yet today, in this tremendously old, old story, in this passage that goes back before even the monarchy of Israel, we have a woman named Hannah. And it's really, if you think about it, an outrage that we don't all know her name. And we don't have any idea what she did. And yet today, we have this tremendously old, old story that goes way back about a woman named Hannah, who not only managed to give birth to Samuel, the last of Israel's judges, but also gave birth to some theology. How she understood, recognized, and appreciated God's presence in her life, in the lives of the people. How can it be that we still wrestle with the place, with the status, the station, the role of women? We have seen in recent weeks, through what's happened in the race to the presidency, there have been exposed some ugly and deeply problematic attitudes. And let's admit that they're not just little isolated things. How can it be that we are still wrestling with this? For those like us who turn to the Bible for guidance, now the message is not entirely clear. But for those who say that the Bible is clear about the subservience of women, they are wrong. It is not clear on that subject. Therefore, it is up to us. We also look to the Bible for guidance. We also are faithful. We also belong to God. We are part of this story. This is what we've been talking about for the last however many weeks, this unfolding story. That we are people who live, we know, and we are called to witness. That women are not to be reduced to what they look like or their reproductive capacity. Hannah speaks eloquently of her theology of God. So do we lift up the voices of women going way back to this ancient, ancient story, realizing that it's a lesson that it's about time we get and understand. And live. Praise be to God. Amen.